Mr. Sternfels does not require you to give evidence under oath. I should advise you that the hearing today is a formal proceeding of the Parliament. I remind you, as I remind all witnesses, that the giving of false or misleading evidence is a serious matter and may be regarded as a contempt of Parliament. And for the Hansard record, would you please state your full name and the capacity in which you appear before the committee today?
My name is Ben Sternfels. I'm a software developer and a business owner in Melbourne.
Would you like to make an opening statement to the committee?
Yes. So last year we submitted a petition relating to the patentability of computer software and specifically computation information processing. What we're really saying in this is that we think generalising the patent system to computer software doesn't quite work as it is expected to do. The purpose of the patent system is to promote innovation in a particular industry by trading off some monopoly on the use of a particular idea for a period of time so that publicises it to the wider community and it can be used to, you know, promote innovation in society. In around 1991, the first software patents were released in Australia, and comparing the times before and after those patents and the now sort of period of wide patentability of computer software, we see that there's been, before 1991, we saw huge and rapid innovation in computing all the way through from the 60s all the way through with amazing things like the internet and, lots of amazing software. And now looking back on it, having the hindsight of seeing software patents come in, there's a wide consensus that they're actually causing more harm to the industry than good. So what we're essentially saying is that they're a poor fit to, patents are a poor fit to computer software, and that we think the software industry and the community as a whole would be better off if they didn't apply to computer software.
How are other countries dealing with this issue?
It's quite a similar concern across the world. Our patent system is heavily affected by what the US does in their system and the dealings in the federal court there. So that's in part where our legislation comes in through some of the negotiations we've had with other countries. In most places, computer software is patentable, except for some countries such as New Zealand, which have recently made a very groundbreaking arrangement to exclude computer software from patentability. So they're one of the minority.
How they achieve that?
Through similar process to, I guess, what I've been trying to do, producing a, discussing it in the public, collecting, consensus about it and putting it to their government, and they made a decision to exclude from the legislation computer software, yeah.
Are you aware of policies that have been adopted in other countries to establish the boundary between patentable and non-patentable software?
I don't have specific legal knowledge on patents all that much, so I'm really coming at it from a person who is affected by them in my work and through, you know, through my involvement in the community, so not in specific detail, no.
Any other countries that you're aware of considering introducing legislation to abolish software patents?
There's been a lot of discussion in the European Union about it. The Patent Office does have a policy, as I understand, that states that they don't endorse patents on computing software, things like that. But there is actually a lot of patents going through still that are what people in the industry would consider to be computer software. So, yeah.
Okay. The committee notes that the Advisory Council on Intellectual Property's current work program includes a review of the innovation patent system. And one of the questions in a discussion paper released by the ACIP is whether the excluded subject matter for an innovation patent should be amended to include computer software. Against that background, to what extent have those involved in the petition been involved in the review process?
So we came into this a little bit late in a way. We missed, there was a 2008 review of patentable subject matter, which in hindsight I would have loved to have been involved in and put in a submission for that, but I unfortunately wasn't aware of it. So we missed that one. That's why we got this, we made an electronic letter to Senator Carr and submitted that with 1,000 names on it, and then we followed on with this petition to the House of Representatives. And then this was following the review process for that ACIP review, the original one, which we couldn't actually technically have any impact on because it was after the thing. So we were putting this in because we still felt it was a significant issue and we were happy to work on it in the long term. The review on innovation patents came up recently, and we submitted various people in the community submitted submission, I guess, to that review, and a few of the ambassadors we have in our campaign put in a collective letter stating the concerns with that.
Did you participate in the October roundtable conferences?
No.
Okay. Were you aware of it?
No, unfortunately. I've recently found out that there's an email list that I can get on, so I now get all the updates from the IP Australia and ACIP, which is good. So.
And
you
actually put a submission into the review?
Yeah, we found out after the round table had occurred, because the round table was, I don't know, 3 weeks before, and then there was the actual review, so the date that the review closed, so we managed to squeeze some things in. Yeah.
Generic concerns of the software community. So what is it that precludes you? Is it sharing information? Is it the same issues that Jane Patents have about, you know, the blocking intellectual developments and things? Or what's the narrowest definition of what is the issue that a patents are prohibiting you doing?
So we don't think anyone actually likes dealing with software patents. For large companies, it's as much a hassle to them and a cost to them as it is to all the to small to medium businesses. But to them, it's actually a cost of business, and it has some benefits in that they can use it to suppress smaller players in the market. So they have a monopoly on a particular thing. So if they have the unfortunate thing is these patents are almost weaponized in the way that they're used, because large companies don't actually come in with specific demands about if you write a piece of software, you might get a letter saying that you've violated 20 of these patents or something, and if they're kind of used in bulk as a way to
crush you.
Yeah, they're not looking to go to court. It's just a way to get it.
It's not a threatening letter. You'll back off. You're not going to take on Microsoft.
Yeah,
let's face it, you're not going to take on Microsoft or Apple, are you? You're not.
Right.
They're going to win. They've got more money than you have, so you know. Yeah.
So it kind of has that chilling effect on people writing software. We find ourselves trying to write software we're not going to get sued for, rather than writing good software, which is a really unfortunate sort of situation.
And so much of it would be interlinked, that how do you demonstrate whose intellectual property it was and where it started, and I suppose nowadays, because we're so far down, that you would use a lot of the basis of everybody's software to develop and grow.
Well, I can tell you specifically about some of the things that I think are different between the software industry and other industries. Software is actually, the components of software can be quite rapidly built. They don't have any physical, they don't exist physically, and they don't need industrial processes to build them. They don't wear out, they don't overheat, things like that. You don't need a factory. So you can build systems that have vastly more components than a car or a house or a building, something like that. An equivalent piece of software that took a certain amount of time might have, 100 times more components in it. That might be considered patentable than a building or something like that. I don't know. So that's the actual complexity of it. There's also the rate, because of the way the nature of software, it can actually be built a lot faster, and the industry evolves a lot quicker than other industries. So blocking an idea in software out for 20 years is effectively killing it. Imagine if we didn't have the hyperlink, the link text on the web was patented, we'd still be in the period where that was patented, and wouldn't be able to widely use that without licensing. The cost of duplication of software is almost zero as opposed to something physical. So it means a piece of software can actually be also widely used and rapidly distributed, which is quite different to how a physical device or a drug or can be used. As you said, the building on existing work is really fundamental. In computing, the goal is always to reuse other components because they've been tested and they work, and we focus on building something better than what the idea is always piecing together small parts that work to build a whole that's better than what there was there before. And the other thing is that patents don't consider independent invention of a particular thing to be an excuse for violating a patent. So if someone somewhere else does the same thing as I do, even though I didn't know about it, they can still sue me for it. Independent invention is very, very common in software because people are facing the same problems everywhere. And because some of these things are if you think about them hard enough, you'll come up with the same solution as someone else, and that's quite unfortunate because that just works in a different way to the way the patent system works.
So in that situation here in Australia, is if you decide to go and register that idea to get a patent, is the system here in Australia based on you being the first person to register it, or is it the supposed date of this?
And I haven't actually studied law in any way, so I sometimes get a bit confused between the very widely spread information about the US system and our system. As I understand it, our system is the date you actually register it, not the date you invent it. So,
whereas the US system is, I think, the opposite of that.
The date you invent it, or the date you publicise it.
So the petitions process started because you've got this, people are feeling stymied. You're feeling stymied. So you went the petition route because you didn't know there were these other things happening. Well, the inquiry and the review, and So I'm just trying to get to why did you decide to do a petition for something that's...
The petition came about after we'd found out. I found out about the review because we were getting criticised by a person in Ireland about who does a lot of work on patents, saying, why didn't you guys do anything about this? And I said, oops, we missed that. So this was why we're coming to try and do something now, because we actually, we're...
So you found the petition process useful in getting the issue ventilated?
Yeah, I think it's been a useful way to interact with the government. It's a good way to formalise people's opinions on these things. It's a lot of legwork. if you count the number of minutes it takes to talk to someone about the issue.
Share some of the experience you've had with those people who signed your petition. Tell us about it.
So we did a little bit of work at some conferences. There was a recent one up in Brisbane that I went up to. And I spent quite a bit of time between talks, walking around, talking to people about this issue. And people are generally... Software people are actually quite understanding of this issue, and mostly when they understand that what you're actually talking about, they're like, right, give me a piece of paper, because it's just such a widely discussed issue in the software industry. The interesting thing is that computer people are also a little bit wary of licensing type documents that look like they have to sign something. So they're like, what are you asking me to sign? Perhaps more so than other people. That was an interesting balance, but I think it was a good way to show people that you're serious about an issue. And
Perhaps, bearing in mind the subject of the petition, would you think if we introduced electronic petitioning in Australia that that would greater facilitate an awareness and give greater capacity to get more signatures and have a better outcome in terms of putting all the issues before the public and the government?
Perhaps it might help to show the widespread nature of concern. I guess your concern is that there's less overhead for someone to click a button and to actually read a piece of paper and sign their name in a pen and then post it up, collect them all in one physical place and post them off. But
let me just share an experience. We get an enormous number of emails these days. I'm talking about members of Parliament. And there's been any number of campaigns this year in respect of a wide diversity of issues concerning people. And at one stage, a staffer who monitors my computers, I was getting 750 emails an hour. Now, just I'll repeat, I was getting 750 emails an hour. Now, imagine trying to sort out the genuine ones you get from constituents and your staffs and all that little wonder at times, some slip through the cracks.
Wow.
So that is really... it's a powerful tool, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. We preceded this with a similar type of online sign-up letter thing that we built that once it had been on a public tech news website, we got 1,000 signatures within a week, which was amazing. And the paper petition took us, months to do the same thing, and a whole lot more time and work. But that said, I think the requirement, the actual overhead of having to do this petition and of people having to walk in and actually read it and sign it is actually useful because it shows you that there's a certain amount of weight to it because it's quite easy for someone to set up a campaign and around just to click buttons and send it around on websites and things like that. So I guess you just have to balance the...
Do you think it also helps? I mean, there's a software community, there's a computing community who are working at the pointy end. Do you think it also helps raise awareness within the community about the issue? So that was also good, you being at the conferences, although they knew it, that there was a way of dealing with it. People were taking it on board, so it had a double-edged sword to inform us, but to also inform people.
It's been a big help to me to have to formalise the ideas and write it up in 250 words and speak to everyone about it.
So it actually distilled down, well, what do you want? I mean, a lot of people come to see us, so they send their emails, and it's this absolute ranch, and you sort of sit there and go, well, what do you want? And this is like... So you actually had to say, well, what do we want? And, I mean, in this, is there some need for protection that is not as heavy as patent, or are you saying free it up completely? I mean, because there's a big argument about, the internet. It should be completely free.
And in software, we'd like to work in generalisations. Like, we'd like to use the same solution to multiple problems. And that's great because it saves us work. But... in this particular situation, generalising the patent system to software doesn't work. And we just think it would be better for everyone just not to make that generalisation at all and to completely exclude computation information processing.
Is that because a lot of the source code and the underlying framework for the programs you're writing is going to be the same? Therefore, is there a greater, or possibly a greater advantage in better trademark protection for the software that's actually produced, that's marketed?
Sure. I guess it depends on what your goal is. So if you're saying how do we allow people to make money out of software, then perhaps increasing trademark protection would be useful. But it's important that with this issue, we focus on the fact that the patent system isn't designed to give individual benefits. It's not designed for individual profits or improving business viability and things like that at all. It's designed for the benefit of the community. And we only make this trade-off of a monopoly for 20 years for the sake of the community. And if it's a bad trade, then we just shouldn't be doing it. And I think it's a bad trade, unfortunately.
Can I just highlight that your campaign has brought into focus a number of arguments against the patent software, but what are the main arguments in Australia and globally in favour of maintaining software patents?
Maintaining software patents.
Are there any, in your opinion?
Okay, so the people who are in favour of software patents are large corporations, multinational corporations who have, you know, bucket loads of these patents, and what they can do is trade these patents with each other. So they try and sue, you know, one big corporation tries to sue another big corporation. They say, oh, well, you've got these patents on this issue, well, we've got this bucket load of patents on this particular issue. How about we just trade these and it'll all be fine? Well, you know, we pay you some, you know, set amount of money, it'll be fine. That works okay for them because they have these bucket loads of patents. The smaller medium, you know, small to medium businesses don't have these things to trade with, so they get the nasty end of the stick, which affects their businesses.
Is the Apple Samsung argument here in Australia at the moment a good example of that?
Possibly. I haven't been following that one in detail. I know a little bit about it in that they've been using it to suppress, Apple's been using it to suppress Samsung's distribution of this device in Australia. And I don't actually know whether it's on software grounds or whether it's on hardware grounds. So I'm focusing specifically on software grounds. It wouldn't actually be a useful example in this case because they're not actually just trading the patents and going about their business. They're actually, and normally they don't impact each other too much. It might, you know, cost a few lawyers here, a few dollars here, a few patents here, but they go about their business as usual. So patents, I'm not sure. There was one other thing I was... So the multinational corporations benefit from these. There's a group of companies across the world known as patent trolls, in quotes, which are companies that exist solely for the purpose of holding patents and threatening and suing if they need to other companies to make their money. That's how they deal. The third group of people who benefit from this are patent attorneys. That's their job. They make money by writing patents and taking them to court, writing letters about them. But other than that, I think that's really where the benefit is. I don't think there's any benefit to individuals to write, to get a patent on a particular idea that they want to use in software because of the amount of work involved in doing it and the rate that the computing industry changes. I mean, to myself, I feel like I could better spend my time actually writing software than writing a patent and waiting 2 years for it to be approved and then going and worrying if other people had used it. I mean, I could have done a lot of things in that time. And the cost as well.
Do you think, in terms of your opposition to patenting software, that the petitioning process could be beneficial to educating the wider public? And I say that against the background that I've recently been in Berlin and spoken to the chair and members of the petitions committee of the Bundestag, and for major issues, the German parliament allows petitioners to register, go online, and have this constant blogging and dialogue in relation to thrashing out the issues. Do you think that could be useful for an issue like you have raised to get the truth out
I always jump to the technical details about this sort of stuff in my mind. So how do you show that someone is not submitting it twice, or how do you trust that they actually exist at all, things like that?
I'm sure there's always ways of manipulating the numbers, but to actually get the issue out there, I mean, you're
an
expert.
People feel they can be involved in the system if they can put their voice in some way, and I guess that's what people in the software industry have.
I recently discovered that the German Parliament tries desperately to get an outcome for all the petitions, or they call them requests, where someone has a request, to get some resolution to it, even if ultimately the petitioner, the principal petitioner, doesn't get the ultimate answer that they want in terms of the terms of the of the petition. But they actually have this long negotiation process to try and get some improvement of the issue brought before the Parliament. Mm. And I'm just wondering, because you'll always get crushed by a big multinational company who sees something like this as a threat to, you know, their commercial imperatives.
You mean in the negotiation process with government, or in the...
Well, just in any discussion in the media about it, because, you know, they'll be protecting their patch.
That's true, except that I think it's such a widespread issue in Australia that...
That might be stifling creativity and greater productivity, because an individual like you might have a very good idea but feels that they can't go anywhere because they're going to be knocked over by someone like Microsoft.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. It's hard to put into words, that I think there's actually a whole lot of useful software that can't be built because of this issue, because of the fear around it that it causes in businesses. But definitely the online petitioning, like, because it's the speed of some of these sort of things is helpful, I guess, and it would help the petitions committee too, I guess, that you can actually receive the, you know, the petition faster. You can get a response to it faster, perhaps, I'm not sure. But, I mean, it certainly makes people feel like they can be involved in it more quickly.
There are clever people out there who don't write for newspapers or broadcast on television or whatever, and if something's put out there and there is discussion and dialogue with many messages going back and forth, that would have to be a strong point for electronic petitioning, wouldn't it?
Definitely. I think... It definitely has a place in going forward in the petitioning process. It's just weighing it up with, I mean, perhaps you give a little more weight to a paper petition. Definitely has a place, but perhaps not treated exactly the same as,
Are there any other questions?
Just one. Have you had any personal experience, or do you know of anybody you're acquainted with that has had an issue of being sued for a payment infringement that we're talking about here in this sort of context?
I should have mentioned this probably in my introduction. I run my own business. I don't actually own any patents, and I've never been sued by a patent, probably because I'm not attractive enough as a target yet. But I decided to take this up one day. Look forward to that. I decided to take this up because it's such a people are so concerned about it, and people, I think, in the technology industry are perhaps less inclined to get involved in making themselves heard than in other areas. I don't know. Maybe it's just a... I don't know. That's a generalisation.
Because you're all computer geeks.
Because you're all computer geeks.
And you're stuck at your computer. You don't actually talk to people. You don't interact with them, you know. But the other thing you said at the beginning is that you fear that people are actually stymieing the development of software because they fear what could happen. The cloud.
So as a practical example, I guess, is useful. A video on the web at the moment, it's 2011, and we don't have a standard for video formats on the web, and some browsers work with some videos and some don't, and it's a horrible mess, and I do this for work, so it's more of a mess to me than probably to the public. But the reason why we don't have a standard video format that everyone can use is because of patents affecting some of the leading video formats that are pushed by some of the large companies. The approach that the software industry is quite practical in how they deal with problems, so they think, can we write some software that would fix this problem? So they do, and they come up with the current fashion is to for a standard. If you want a standard to be widely used, you publish an irrevocable license, an irrevocable patent license, whether or not you actually have a patent on it, not to sue anyone who uses that format. So this is a practical, they're working around the patent system by saying, please use this standard format, you can use it forever without being sued, and we can't revoke that license at any point. So that's how they're working around it. The other way they're working around it is through copyright licensing. they put specific clauses into the licenses of the software. So when you, you know, when you open a piece of software and it's got a license on it that says the author of this software cannot, just anyone who contributes to this piece of software cannot sue you for the software, because if they do, well, they can sue you, but if they do sue you, they will no longer be able to use the software themselves. So it's kind of a self-destruct mechanism in the software to say that to really, there's a protection against people, and it's not. It's ultimately, you know, it doesn't provide full protection, but provides some protection, and it also publicises the issue for the community more. So.
Yep. Read those license agreements.
Well, yeah. I guess that's not the point, though. It's because it affects the people who are trying to do, trying to sue with patents, that more than the actual individuals. It's really just a protection to the individuals that they may not know about.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sternfels, for your evidence this morning. You'll get a copy of the transcript of Hansard to make sure that you have been faithfully recorded in your comments today. If there's anything else you want to provide to us, by all means do that. But we thank you for your interest and your time, and it's been a most illuminating exchange.
It's not quite as sexy as dolphins. Or thank you.
We now come to the end of our public hearing session today, and I thank all our participants for their contribution. It has been a most interesting public hearing. As our participants today know, the committee's practice is not to make recommendations on the basis of this kind of public hearing, nor is it the committee's role to investigate petition issues beyond today's session. The aim of today's hearing is to amplify the issues raised by petitions and to look into them further, particularly in the light of any government response, and there will be an official transcript which will be published on the committee's website in due course. And I'd like to thank the staff of the Victorian Parliament for their assistance with the venue arrangements, and thanks to the broadcasting officer, Mr. Peter Treloar, for your services provided here today. Now, I'd like a motion from Mr. Broadbent that the proof and final transcript of the public hearing be published in
Hansard.
Be moved that way, and seconded by Ms. Burke. All in favour? All right. I now declare the public hearing closed, and the committee next meet on the 2nd of December in Traralgon for a public hearing commencing at 9:45 a.m. Thank you.